morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show with host Tanya Brown. We are coming to you from New Orleans, Louisiana, to offer you a bite-sized bit of magic. Our 20-minute-ish episodes are the perfect start to your day. So sit back, relax, and enjoy your pop of magic.
All right, so we have a special segment today. We're talking with author, pagan, teacher, and priestess of the Morgan, Stephanie Woodfield. Stephanie Woodfield is a author, teacher, devotional polytheist, and a priestess of the Morgan. She has written multiple books, including Celtic Lore and Spellcraft of the Dark Goddess, and which will be released on January 8th. So yesterday.
Yeah, Priestess of the Morgan, that's the second book. Just got released, yeah.
Yeah, that's so exciting. So we're recording on the 9th, but this will actually be airing on the 13th. So yeah, it's available. So if anyone listening is like super into what we talk about today, you can just hop on right over and it's fresh, hot, fresh off the press. So yeah. That's awesome. Stephanie has been practicing pagan for over 20 years, answering her calling to help others forge meaningful experiences with the Morgans and other deities of Ireland. So hi, Stephanie, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. We've been trying to get you on for like a month and a half, just like hubbub after hubbub after hubbub. So I really appreciate you coming on and giving us a second chance. Third. So I guess really my first question for you. So I've been in the witchy world since I was like 12. So really, you know, like when most people really get into it. And I've never been a god goddessy person, and that's just because I was raised without that ideal. So I just never was really into that, I guess, the polytheistic traditions or religions or paths. So this is really fascinating to me. And I've heard quite a few people talk about the Morgan. And more so, especially recently. But for someone like me, who is just really unfamiliar with the Morgan and other gods and goddesses, except for like, you know, the few we hear like really often. Could you kind of tell us a little bit about the Morgan? And like what it, like who it is, why it's, I mean, it's really gaining popularity right now. So yeah, can you just tell us a little bit more about it?
Sure. Well, the Morgan is kind of hard to summarize because there's so much to her, but the basics are she is an Irish goddess. She's connected to war, which is usually why a lot of people kind of give her that negative stigma. She's connected to sovereignty, to magic, and to prophecy. Most of the Irish gods aren't just a god of X or Y. I think a lot of the times with some of the classical deities, even though, you know, in Greek and Roman mythology, they are complicated too. We kind of think, okay, well, you know, Athena is the goddess of war and wisdom, or this is the god of the sea. The Irish gods are a little more complex, so they really cover a lot of different things. To make it even more complicated, the Morgan is actually a title. It means the great queen. So it's actually she's not necessarily one deity. Mm. The Morgan is three goddesses, Anu, Maka, and Baiv. And, you know, you have different myths and stories for all of them. So it's really this conglomerate of deities that create the Morgan. And I guess that's kind of why she can be a little bit confusing for people who just start off on the path. There's just so much to her. But for me, I like that. I like that she's not very one note. She covers so many different things.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And yeah, it, you know, definitely has been confusing, especially for me in the past, because I would have people like write about the Morgan and would always write about it in terms of as if it's like a single deity. And so just as a writer, I'm like, why are we calling it the?
Yeah.
Is it not just Morgan? Because I'm thinking like one deity. So hearing you explain it like that, I'm like, oh, that makes sense, because it's like a title. So that makes a lot more sense from what I've known. So you said it's three deities. Which do the represent anything in particular?
Of the three that create the Morgan?
Yes.
So that's Anu, Maka, and Bive. They're the three daughters of Ernmas. Some people do include Nevin, which is another war goddess who's connected to Bive. She's not actually one of the daughters of Ernmas, but a lot of modern readers also include her in there. That's another complicated subject.
Oh, yeah.
But
sure.
The three of them aren't really a triple goddess in the idea of like in Wicca, where you have maiden, mother, crone. They have their own personalities. There isn't one that's old or young, or, you know, it doesn't represent the stages of a woman's life. They're just different deities that connect to different things. They're all connected to war in some way, to sovereignty, to magic, prophecy. Bive in particular is very connected to prophecy. So they have their own separate mythologies as well, but they all encompass the same general idea of war, sovereignty, magic, prophecy, regardless of which of the three deities it is. But they all have their very distinct personality. And I kind of did, when I first started working with the Morgan, see her just as the Morgan, as that one deity. And it took me a while for each of them to kind of approach me and me to realize, okay, all right, they are very distinctly different.
That's really interesting. Because, you know, a lot of people, you know, you're writing these books on the Morgan, and people are kind of getting more into it. Where do you think there's a benefit in working with this kind of group of deities versus maybe like devoting yourself to like one in particular?
Well, I too work with other deities as well. It's not just the Morgan in my own practices, but obviously the Morgan is the one that kind of overtakes the rest of them. She's more of my main focus. So you can still work with other deities, but I find with the Morgan, what most people feel called to her to do in their own personal work is reclaiming their own sovereignty, reclaiming things about their own lives, and, I don't know, just becoming like a stronger person. There's something very powerful in that image of a woman being strong, being a warrior, and taking on things that you don't always find in other deities. But you still have to have a balanced practice. Just because you work with the Morgan doesn't mean you're only going to work with the Morgan. And it also doesn't mean she's always going to show you that warlike side of her. There's a whole lot more to her than just battle and war.
Okay. So, like, if someone's listening right now and they're, you know, kind of curious about it, who do you think the Morgan's ideal for? Like, what type of witch or individual?
Well, I mean, I think she could call to different types of people for different reasons. But for me personally, I'm very introverted. Like, when I first became an author, I didn't want to go do, like, festivals or anything like that. I'm like, I just want to write my stuff and just, you know, stay at home and read books and, you know, be my introverted self. And, of course, then the Morgan kind of pushed me to create a festival for her, or a retreat, to go and do things and create events for her and do public rituals. So I think she kind of makes you come out of your shell, if you will. At least that's what she did for me. And I think anyone who's dealing with any struggle in life, I mean, look at the world right now. Like, everyone has something they're dealing with. And she's that strength that really, you know, helps you get through it. You know, it's not, we shouldn't always be in a state of struggle. So once you get through whatever difficult time you have, she can also teach you how to rebuild afterwards, how to make stronger foundations, how to make stronger boundaries with people too. So, you know, I think she really could appeal to anyone who's going through a difficult time.
So what do the practices, let's say someone listening is like, oh yeah, you know, I've been going through a really hard time. Wow, I've been going through a hard time for a while. And maybe like this is something I could look into, maybe find a little inspiration, or even become like a devotee to. What would that practice look like? Like what kind of exercises or ritual does that look like for someone who may be interested in like learning more?
For building a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the first thing to think about is that when you start building a relationship with deity, don't think it's going to happen overnight. You're not suddenly going to know everything about deity, you know, after reading one book or, you know, researching her for a little bit. It's a process, so let the process happen. It's going to take a while, and you're going to evolve along that path. But easy things would be create an altar, create some kind of space that welcomes the deity, welcomes the Morgan, into, you know, your personal space. And I think taking the time is the big thing. There's a lot of authors, including myself, that give examples of devotional work that could be giving offerings, pouring offerings on an altar, doing prayer work, different daily devotions. Mm-hmm. The main thing is show up for the work. Even if it's just sitting in the morning with your morning coffee and just talking to the Morgan. Just spend the time trying to build that practice. And I think one of the mistakes a lot of people do is when we're trying to connect to a deity, we kind of have all this stuff we want to say,
mm-hmm.
all these things that we want to ask a deity. We kind of don't let them talk to us because we're doing all the talking. It's like, you know, this is going on in my life and I need help with this and so on. Sometimes if you just have a practice of stillness, let the deity speak to you. Be open to receiving information. Just kind of talk to them like they're your best friend or someone you know or a family member. Don't always ask for stuff. Just have a conversation and be open to hearing whatever the divine wants to tell you.
No, that's great advice for, I think, working with any deity, whether it be Morgan or like, Hecate, Freya, etc. But how would it look different for the Morgan? Like, what are some practices that you would do for the Morgan versus someone like Hecate? Like, what are you like really focusing on when you do like rituals or or I guess I would say devotional type of work, stuff that's for her. Like, I keep referring to the Morgan as if it's one individual, but it's such habit. If you are doing things specifically for the Morgan, like offerings or devotional work, kind of like, what does that look like?
Well, offering wise, whiskey is always good for any Irish deity.
That'd be legit.
Yeah, I don't think they'd ever turn it down, really. Well, for her specifically, it's going to depend if you're going to try to connect to Anu, Maka, or Baiv. Baiv for me is very, a lot of raven imagery. There's going to be different colors I would use versus if I'm connecting to Maka, who's very connected to horses, the color red, things like that. But those are all, you know, those are all the accoutrements. Those are all the stuff that go on like an altar. You don't actually really necessarily need that stuff. And I know it sounds deceptively simple just to say, okay, just sit down and be open and connect to a deity, but it is, you know, you don't always need the extra stuff. A lot of the work I do, I don't necessarily need altars or ritual stuff and things like that. That's maybe just where I am in my practices. But
yeah,
I
definitely feel like that's something that happens when you get really good at it, but isn't really realistic for people who are just starting.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, if you need to create an altar and use those imagery, that's perfectly fine. But I think something simple and easy to do that doesn't involve buying stuff is to read her stories. Mm. Try to connect to her myths and stories. Something I do is I'll read a section of a myth and then I'll just meditate on that section. and try to open to them and see what they want to reveal about that passage that I'm reading. And especially in a time now where, you know, people's incomes are a lot, are impacted because of what's going on, you know, you can do a lot of simple things to connect to deity that doesn't involve, you know, buying anything fancy for your altar or anything like that. But connecting to her stories is and understanding her stories are really important. Because I can tell you or can paraphrase what a story is in one of my books. But if you read that actual story, you might get something completely different out of it.
Oh, there's a bit of a lag. Sorry.
Yeah, there is. You froze.
I was waiting for your video to catch up to your audio.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. Skype. Good old Skype. So I guess another one of my questions for you is, and just because it's been a really rough week, and I feel when we do talk about gods and goddesses, or I don't even really love saying gods and goddesses, but just like deities and entities, I think one of the really helpful ways to encapsulate who they are and what they represent is to try to connect them to things going on in this world. So it's been a really hard week. And honestly, we're recording this on Saturday. Who knows what's going to happen between Saturday and Wednesday? But how do you think the Morgan would react or relate to what we're dealing with right now in this country?
Well, I think there's a couple of things there. Obviously, her side connected to war and battle and struggle. It's not that she creates those difficult situations. To me, she's that force that sees us through them. That kind of gives us that hope that we will survive the battlefield, if you will. So for me, she's that source of strength that we can rebuild, that we can be strong, and that we can see ourselves through dark times. I think part of what some people forget about the Morgan, because they kind of just concentrate on her as being a war goddess and stirring up strife and things like that, and seeing us through, you know, the difficult part of the battle, or inspiring us to fight against certain things. She's also the one that proclaims the peace. At the end of the second battle of Moytura, she's in her guise as Vive. She stands on the battlefield in the middle of all this destruction, and she delivers a prophecy. And she's saying that it's time to stop now. We need to rebuild. We've gone through our struggle. I see good times ahead. She also has a second part of that prophecy where she foretells the, basically like the end of the world, bad things as well. But, you know, things come in cycles. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very important to understand that she both stands at the beginning of battle and struggle and at its end. So she's someone who can also say, okay, it is enough. It is time to rebuild. It is time for peace. And that's just the part of her that I'm feeling very much right now with everything going on, that, you know, okay, enough is enough. Now we need to set everything right. We need all to work towards rebuilding. So, I don't know, that's just the vibe I get from her right now. And I think that's something that everyone can probably connect with, that there needs to be an end to the time of struggle, especially living through 2020. I think we're all ready for some good
things. We're ready. And it's funny because when you were talking before about how the Morgan does encapsulate these three deities, I've noticed a pattern where typically when there are three deities in a title or a group, I've been really focused on the Fates recently. And there is typically one that focuses on the birth of, one that focuses on the length of, and one that focuses at the end of. So when, you know, like you saying that, you know, there's like the prophesizing of struggle, the, you know, during struggle, and then the, okay, now it's peace time. It kind of, you know, really resonated with how we typically look at a three entity structure, I think.
Yeah, beginning, middle, ends, definitely.
Yeah. Gosh, yeah, if, I'm definitely ready. I'm ready for peace. I'm ready for that part of it. I think we all are ready. So we do have some questions from some listeners. One you actually already answered from Anna. How do you begin working with the Morrigan and other gods and goddesses in general? But you already answered that. Is there anything you wanted to add?
Well, I guess focusing on devotional practice and devotion, I think maybe just to add that devotional practice looks different for everyone. For some people, that's prayer. Sometimes it's making offerings, or it could also be, you know, other things. It could be creating art. It could be writing your own prayers or writing your own chants. It doesn't have to be this active thing of, you know, I'm giving something to deity or I'm saying something to deity. This October, I was part of a 31 Days of the Morrigan challenge where everyone created different things. There was a theme for every day, and which I like because it was very orderly and structured, and I like that. But, you know, some people created an art piece. Some people wrote a prayer. They created, like, all sorts of really cool things. And while I was watching, like, what everyone's posting, I'm like, this is all devotion. It's not just, you know, like, for me, it was writing prayers because I like writing stuff. But, you know, sitting down and making an art piece, that's an act of devotion, too. Or it could be doing one brave thing a day. Don't think that your devotion has to be in the form of prayer or offerings. Think outside the box. Make it your own.
Stephanie Gorski asks, how did you know the Morrigan had called on you to work with her? And is her correct? Because I'm just, since we're talking about a group, is it correct to say her when talking about like the Morrigan?
You could, or you could say they.
Okay.
It's, and again, you know, some people focus on the Morrigan as a singular deity, even though she has those three different deities that make her up. So a lot of it also is your perspective or maybe where you are in your work with her. So either would be, you would be perfectly fine.
Oh, okay.
Well, how I personally came to work with the Morrigan is, well, back when I was a baby pagan, I was working with this group that was, they're kind of Celtic flavored. They worked with a lot of Celtic deities. And part of being part of that group is that you, after a year, you had to select or feel that you were called to a patron deity. Mm-hmm. And I had this whole thing where I told them like, you know what? I want to work with all these different goddesses. I'm not going to pick just one deity as a patron, and I don't have to pick a patron. And I had this very,
I mean, hey,
is fine. But like, I had this whole explanation why I thought I didn't need to do this thing as part of the group. And I felt it, I had good arguments, and I went home that night. And then I had this vivid dream of this woman who was turning into crows. And there was something very powerful about her. And in the dream, I just walk up to her and I ask, who are you? And she just looks at me and says, the Morrigan. And then I wake up and I'm like, well, that's weird. Cause I had no idea who she was.
I was gonna ask, were you acutely aware of the Morrigan at that point?
Not at all. Like, oh, I knew who Le Fay was because I like Arthurian mythology, but, you know, I was very early on in my practices. Most of the people in that group were dedicated to Bridget. So, I mean, I knew a little bit more about Bridget than any other Celtic deity just because I was working with a lot of Bridget devotees. But, yeah, I had no idea she was a goddess at all. So I started looking at different books that I had at the time, trying to figure out, you know, maybe this is just a weird dream. And then I found a reference to her in a book about some Celtic pagan practices. And literally the entry was like really tiny. All the other deities had like 2 or 3 pages written about them. And with her, it was just like, do not work with this deity. She's bloodthirsty.
Oh my gosh.
Dangerous. So I'm like, oh.
Drama.
Right? And, you know, I kind of thought at the time, well, you know what? Whoever wrote that, like, they know more than I do. I should just listen to them. So then the Morrigan decided to make sure that I was aware of her presence. I started seeing crows everywhere. When I went to work in the morning, there were just crows sitting on the top of my car. There were crows all over the place outside of my house. And at first I thought, okay, like maybe someone left the garbage can open and that's something's attracting them. Like I tried all of these things to dissuade these birds from hanging out around me. And then finally, kind of the straw that broke me was at work, this office building I was working at, the air conditioner broke and we had to keep the door open. So we didn't like sweat to death. And a crow just walked inside the office and started squawking. And I'm just looking at this crow and I'm like frozen. I'm like, wow, the Morgan is stalking me. listen to her.
And you're like, the book was right.
Right. It's like, okay, I got the message. And my boss had to chase that crow around the office for like a half hour before it would leave. And after that, I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna do a ritual and try to connect with her. And I kind of just went from there. I just kind of let her guide me because obviously she wanted to talk to me. And that's kind of why I wrote the first book, The Celtic Lore and Spellcraft of the Dark Goddess, because she had such a bad reputation in the pagan community. People didn't want you to call on her in a ritual even. Like I had a friend who went to a public ritual where they were all supposed to say something about a deity they worked with as part of the ritual. And they told her she couldn't talk about the morgue.
Oh my God.
Right.
That's actually, you just reminded me of something I heard like really recently. There's a plane flying by, but they were talking about, especially goddesses in particular, but that there has always been such a rich tapestry of goddesses and goddesses of anger, goddesses of filth, goddesses of sex. And like, but the problem is that when there was kind of the mass conversion back in the day, these stories and these deities were rewritten from no offense to Christians, but from the Christian perspective. So a lot of these goddesses became goddesses of fertility. And it's like, okay, why is there 70% all these goddesses of fertility? It's like they were being kind of like washed over with this Christian lens. And we see that a lot now. I mean, that I kind of feel like what you saw in that book is a symptom of that. Like, well, these are the bad ones, and absolutely. And then the rest are fertility goddesses. So I think that's a great example of that.
No, definitely she's definitely had a bad reputation. So I mean, in a Christian lens, and again, you're right, like nothing against Christianity, but they would have seen her as like something demonic, almost this battle fury on the battlefield stirring up men to go to war. And that was really part of, and also like even in the 90s, we had the like satanic kind of craze or scare. I think there was a big push even in paganism to make sure everything was very love and light and very, I don't know, a whitewashing of happy, good energy vibes. Like we didn't want to talk about dark goddesses because we didn't want witchcraft to seem dark and scary in any way. We had to be something that passed, something that was just positive. And, you know, we kind of rejected a lot of those darker deities because of it. But that is part of why I wrote that book.
That's a great topic, because even the idea of white magic and black magic was political. Idea of like, well, we want people to not hate witches, so we're going to say we're good witches or white witches so that we're not hated by or feared by mainstream society. But there is no black magic or white magic. It was a political stance to not be hated by the mainstream. And trying to kind of drive that home for some people is really difficult because they've been preached to since they were, you know, newer witches, that there's black magic and white magic, and undoing that is very difficult. So you worked on your first book, but what made you want to write a second book?
Well, my first book, actually this year it's 10 years old. And...
Oh, congratulations. That's so exciting.
And, you know, I took a couple years to write it before I actually sent it out to any publishers. It was my first book ever. And, you know, again, it was mostly just to kind of say, like, this is who the Morgan is. And, yeah, she can be a little scary. And, yeah, she's going to make you face some of your fears and the darker things that you have to look at. But she's not a goddess you shouldn't work with. She's, you know, part of us. Dark goddesses aren't, you know, something scary or something we should ignore. So it was, it's kind of like a snapshot of my practices 15 years ago, basically. And there were very different misconceptions about the Morgan then than there are now. I think there's, because now she's popular. I mean, yeah. Talking about dark deities or understanding magic is, like you said, not being black or white, but just, you know, it's a tool. It's what you use it for. I mean, we have people talking about public curses. You know, it's a very different...
very different time.
Yeah, very different time now. So... You know, there's completely different misconceptions about the Morgan now than there was back then. And my first book was really an introduction. The new book, Priestess of the Morgan, is a lot about my own journey with the Morgan. Each chapter opens with a story about something that's happened in my own practice with her. So there's got a little of that element of like a diary of a witch. By Sybil Leake. I loved that book when I first started practicing.
Oh, Sybil Leake. What a classic. Like, yeah. What a classic lady. Ugh.
And it's also about going a little bit deeper into how to work with the Morgan as well. So it's kind of Morgan 2.0, I guess.
So that leads me into my next question. How does it differ? Because, you know, I like to remind people that every path, religion, tradition, it looks completely different within it. So you went from a devotee of the Morgan to a priestess within that path or tradition. How does that differ, the two?
Well, being a devotee is someone who worships a deity. And being a priestess, part of being a priestess is having an oath of devotion to that deity. And you're in service to that deity. And even more so, you are in service to the community. You're that bridge between the community and the deity. And that's very different. Your practices and your devotion a lot of times is very focused on other people rather than yourself. And it's definitely like, it can be a struggle to make sure that you also nourish your own devotion to the deity as well. So most of my work is focused on that, on community, on either doing events, running rituals, writing books. And that is in service to the Morgan and to the community as well. Where devotees, more about your own personal path. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's kind of something we do need to start stressing. I think we kind of see being a devotee, the path between being a devotee and a priestess.
Or as priest. Like promotional.
Right. Like, yeah. We're getting merit badges or something like that, or leveling up. There is nothing wrong with just being a devotee of a deity. You could be that for 20 years and know that deity very deeply. And you don't have to be a priest or priestess. It's very different work, but it doesn't mean that your connection to deity is any less.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Because when you're a devotee, it's all about your relationship between you and the deity. Whereas priestess, now I'm fostering, I'm kind of being a civil servant of the whole community as a whole. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it really is more almost like sacrificial of I'm now giving myself to the community of devotees instead of just fostering my own personal relationship.
Absolutely.
That's all we've got. Was there anything that we didn't touch on that you want to elaborate further on?
Well, you can You can find my work on stephaniewoodfield.com, and I also have a blog, Dark Goddess Musings. And if you like art and different creative stuff, I do have an Etsy store, The Forge of Awesomeness. And I just hope everyone enjoys this new look at the Morgan with my book. You know, Priestess of the Morgan, writing this was, so much of my heart and my devotion is in this book, especially with the personal stories that I share. So I really hope that that it helps others find their own path and find their own connection to the Morgan.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely have links to both your website and both of your books in the podcast description. So if anyone listening is curious and kind of wants to dip your toe further, we'll have those links for them to check out. All right. So thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
God.
Witches, we hope that you have an amazing day filled with magic and inspiration. If you'd like to support the podcast, head on over to our Patreon. Need a support system? Find The Witch Daily Show on Facebook and our website, witchdailyshow.com.